This week on Daiwa, we're in Crawford County. A hose connected to a running car's exhaust is found in a home, along with 7 bodies.
Welcome to Daiwa, the first Iowa-focused true crime podcast, where there's 99 counties and a murder in every one. These are your hosts, Beth LaValle and Allie Tulin.
All right, we're in Crawford County.
I'm a big fan of Crawford County.
Oh boy, what does this mean? Why?
Well, you might say that it's home to one of Iowa's most famous actresses, and I'm going to make you guess who. My only hint is that she stars in a Christmas classic.
Oh god, I'm bad with old Hollywood, and I'm even worse with female old Hollywood. Let's just go with Marilyn Monroe here. Beth, I don't know.
No.
I don't know.
So, Crawford County is also the home of Denison, Iowa, which is the biggest town in the county, and that is home to the beloved Donna Reed. And was she even on your radar?
No. Not even a little bit, but if you maybe showed me a picture.
Okay.
Maybe.
But you've seen, like, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, Donna Reed, she's the mom.
Okay, so I know who Donna Reed is. Good.
So, yes, Donna Reed is from Denison, Iowa, which is the biggest town in Crawford County. You can actually go and see the Oscar that she won for a role in From Here to Eternity at the W.A. McHenry Museum, because, unfortunately, Donna's birth home was destroyed in a fire. Also, fun fact, the McDonald's plays or used to play Donna Reed movies. So, that's a must-see. But my last Donna Reed note is a cute sentimental Iowa note. Her co-star Shelley Fabre described her as a real Iowa girl and said, "There is a bedrock decency to people in the Midwest. They are thoughtful and ready to help you if something needs to be done." She never lost that Midwest girl.
Wow, never heard a truer statement.
So sweet.
Not just about Donna Reed, I just meant about Midwest girls.
Exactly.
Okay, good. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. So, for those of you listening, this is not a podcast about Donna Reed.
I'm done.
Okay. Let's get to our murder. It's 1937. Cars are still pretty new in Iowa. FDR is president. Love FDR.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the year that Amelia Earhart disappears on her attempt to fly around the world. On August 26th, 1937, Albert Nolan was a 36-year-old tenant farmer in Kenwood, Iowa, and he arrived home from a night out. A tenant farmer, fun fact, is someone who farms someone else's land or pays rent to farm. So basically, someone else owns all the capital, but they are paid to actually do the work. So Albert is married, and he has 6 children. And he arrived home to find the family car backed up under a bedroom window with the motor roaring. And inside, all 6 children and his wife are found dead.
This is definitely going to be a sad one. Let's go into who the family is. So we know Albert Nolan. Albert is married to Elsie, who is 30 years old. Elsie's originally from Carroll, Iowa, and has been married to Albert for 14 years at the time of her death. Which means Elsie was 16 when they got married and only 19 when she had her first kid. And then here are the kids' ages at the time of their deaths. They have Orvin, who is 11, then Wilbert, who is 10, Pauline, age 7, Earl, 6, Leona, 4, and Viola, 2.
They all sound so cute.
I know.
So when Albert finds the bodies, he reports it in, and Sheriff C.A. Green arrives at the house. Sheriff Green says Albert admitted it was, quote, all my fault, and he noted that he was worried Albert might take his own life. Albert did give Sheriff Green a suicide note that Elsie wrote and asked him to read it to him. The note is all about how unhappy the marriage is, and it is pretty dark.
Here's a clip that a newspaper reported was from page 6 of the note. "I have tried and tried to live a decent life and raise my kids upright so they would be decent. but they have a father that does not care for them or either me. He don't know any better. Albert was awfully good to me when he wasn't drinking. I couldn't ask for a better husband, but oh, he sure was awful when he got drunk. He has beat me up lots of times, and I always forgot about that just because I loved him and wanted to live with him. Now today he got drunk. I never said much to him because I knew it would just be a fight again. Oh my, such a life. I have lots I could tell, but I'm getting tired. I hope Albert will be happier when he is rid of us. I am doing this because I can see that the family is not going to be raised up right, and I think it is a shame to let them grow up and live such a life.
Wow. Okay. Sheriff Green said Elsie became angered with her husband after questioning him on why he was going out. Albert said it was none of her business, but he drove the whole family with him to Denison on Saturday night. Albert parked the car with Elsie and the children in it in front of the Denison post office. When he returned at 11 p.m., the car was gone. He caught a ride home with a friend, which is when he came across the terrible scene.
Elsie had reportedly coupled a piece of flexible metal tubing used to carry off the exhaust from a small gasoline washing machine motor to the exhaust pipe of the car and placed it beneath the bedroom window. She then caulked the window tightly with rags.
Elsie and the youngest daughter, Viola, were found on the bed in that bedroom next to the car. The second youngest, Leona, was on the floor in that room. Articles suggested she had struggled through the choking fumes to reach her mother's side. The other four children were found in the adjoining living room. Orvin, the oldest, had awakened and made a futile attempt to reach his mother, but the others died in their sleep.
By the time the sheriff had arrived, the family had been reportedly dead for 3 hours, and no attempt was made to revive them. There was a funeral held for Elsie and her children the following Tuesday. Albert Nolan remarried a year later, had 10 sons, and eventually moved to Oregon in his 50s. He died there in 1977 and left behind 20 grandchildren.
All right, this is a tough one to listen to, but let's call Taps and hear what he has to say.
Sounds good. Hey, Taps, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, today we are talking about Crawford County. And I'm curious, this case is near Denison, Iowa, in a town called Kenwood. Have you ever heard of Kenwood?
I had not, but I looked it up and I am familiar with the area. So I assume the town has disappeared at some point. It might be just a couple of buildings at an intersection.
Had you ever heard of the case?
No.
So you know that Elsie left a note and said that she didn't want her children to kind of grow up like their father. Any reason why you can think she would choose to murder all of her children?
No, it's probably a mental illness issue. I've been involved in a couple of them in my life. One where a lady shot her two kids in the backseat of a car when she and her husband separated. And one, I knew of one back in the 50s in near the town where I grew up, where a woman had poisoned all of her children. You might even recall a case in Houston about probably 10 years ago where a woman killed like 3 or 4 kids at home while the husband was at work. So it's really difficult to understand it, but it's got to be a mental illness issue.
Have you heard of like the other cases leaving notes?
In the one that happened by my house, she did not, but she was in the car when the police got there. And in the one near my hometown, I don't know. It was in the 50s and I just never really got all the details. It's not uncommon in these cases for the parent to leave a note and try to explain why she did such a horrendous act.
Wow.
And the note is pretty detailed. I guess you don't assume that it was an abusive household?
It could be. I mean, that's definitely a possibility. But I guess I would pose the question back, what's it take to kill children? And even if you're in an abusive relationship, I would think that the overwhelming urge not to harm your children would be controlling. Now, again, every case is different. We had a case here probably 20 years ago where a mother drove her children into the Missouri River in a car, and there was alleged to be some domestic violence involved in it or whatever.
So it could be the abuse leads to mental illness, which
then tragedy. It's was the abuse part of a mental illness problem, or I mean, it's just a lot of these cases. But in these kinds of cases, I always go back to what would it take for a mother to kill her own children? And that's a pretty strong threshold to get over.
Mm-hmm. I'm also curious, are there a lot of cases where fathers kill their children, or is this more common with mothers?
I've been involved in a couple of fathers killing their children. One that I can think of right away, I don't think the couple was married, but he had gone in and shot both of his kids in their bed before he killed her. It appears, just anecdotally, that I think it happens more with mothers and their children. And again, I don't have the psychology background to explain it, but I'm sure a psychologist could tell us that there's probably even a syndrome or some kind of thing in the DSM that could explain it.
Okay, so this next question, we're going to age you a bit, but we knew you grew up in Iowa in like the 60s.
Right.
So did you see mental illness growing up in small town Iowa, and was it addressed?
I saw a lot of it, and much of it was not addressed. Some things are better now, some things are worse. In those days, the people of the town, especially in small towns, tended to help those people, and they could stay in their house. They would do, pardon the word, but kind of crazy stuff. And the people in the town would just tolerate it and help them not get into trouble. When President Kennedy was elected in the early 60s, his sister obviously had mental illness. And he pushed hard to deinstitutionalize people with mental illness. And so now, of course, we have a lot of people that are not institutionalized in any kind of residential facility. And so you see a lot more mental illness just walking around the street, especially in the homeless population.
Interesting. So would you say you still see that today in like the jail system, where somebody is locked up but mental illness isn't taken seriously?
Jails, especially jails and prisons to some degree, are the largest mental health facilities in the country. And they were never intended to be. There's more mental illness in jails than almost anywhere else in the country. And if you talk to some of the jail administrators across the country, especially like LA, that has the largest jail in the country, they will say that they spend a significant amount of their day dealing with mental health issues. They, in LA, they actually have, it's a high rise jail. They actually have floors dedicated to just mental illness issues. So it's definitely a problem. And because of the deinstitutionalization, jails end up being the backstop when things happen on Sunday night at 3 a.m. or whatever.
So this might be too big of a question for this podcast and or you, but like, are jails and prisons starting to get the resources that they need to deal with that mental illness? Or is that still an issue where they're just trying to kind of scrape together some sort of plan to address that?
No, there are some initiatives in the jail that I'm associated with. We have two mental health case managers that work full-time out of the jail every day. And we have an inmate population of about 270. We probably could use two more. They work hard and they're on cases all day long. Again, there's a lot coming in from the homeless population. You know, police face these people out on the street and have no other recourse but to arrest them for some small misdemeanor charge and then house them in the jail where they won't cause problems or people won't call in on them, things of that nature. So there is a movement in the pod system of jails. Jails used to be built linear, where, you know, long hallways with cells and everybody in them. Now we are building pod style jails where each pod has direct inmate supervision in that pod. And we can now set a whole pod up for mental illness and then bring our mental health professionals and our medical staff into that pod to try to work some of those issues. But again, some of these problems are 50, 60 years old, and we're trying to solve them in a couple of days. So it's difficult.
What would you do today responding to a case like Elsie's?
If she was a danger to herself or others, and the police could detect that at the scene, she would be committed involuntarily to a mental health facility for up to 72 hours for a assessment. Also, nowadays, the children are much more protected. So there would be a call to the Department of Human Services hotline, and DHS caseworkers would come out and grab the kids and get them out of that environment. So we protect better than we did back.
Gotcha. Well, I think that is it on this case, but thanks for joining us and we'll talk to you soon.
You're welcome.
Oh, hello there. As a marketer, I hate promotions like this.
Same and same.
But I love content.
Me too.
So if you like our content, give us a like, follow, share, subscribe, note, fax, literally anything you think would help us continue making Daiwa a success.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.